Okay, so we'll get on with the meeting. So, admin matters, first item. MSA 1.6, no news from the moderator, NA4 is trying to find a new one. Who's dealing with MSA 1.6? I don't remember. Any further news from anybody on MSA 1.6?
No, Kai.
Oh, it's Kai. Oh, okay, Kai's not on the line today. Fine, okay, so move on. MSA 1.7, assessment of infrastructure reliability. Is there any update from, I believe this is the Russian Rock writing this one. Any update on this?
Yes, I have some update on this point.
Is it on track? Are we late? Are we on time?
I'm sorry. This is Alexander. I can report it about update the point MSA 1.7. I can start.
Okay.
Well, my colleagues and me make some exchanges of the mail with Matthew and John Shade, and we make some questions about the content of the document, and we try to clarify some points also. For example, there was some proposal to give information about availability and reliability meter wire. Really, we don't understand what does it mean, but my proposal, we can to consider these parameters as the number of the Zegus tickets or Savanna tickets deal with the problem with the meter wire. Is it correct or no? Nevertheless, we sent some requests to Matthew and John, and we have some. We expect some answer from them soon. We also to make another improvement of the documents. So, this is in general the current status of these documents.
Okay. So, are we on schedule for finishing it in time, do you know? I'm not sure when it's due.
I think so.
Okay.
I think so.
Okay, that's fine. Okay, so moving on, admin matters. The next SA1 face-to-face meeting is now confirmed as being in Catania on the 4th of March. It'll be all day. So the idea is people flying the day before because it's not such an easy place to get to, so it's not really feasible for people to get there in a few hours in the morning. So the idea is people flying on the 3rd, stay overnight, we have the meeting all day on the 4th, and people leave on the 4th in the evening. Any questions? No? Okay, we'll move on. Do we have Helene on the line?
Yes, Nick, I'm there.
Hi, Helen.
For this slot, we had arranged that with, I don't know if Martin is online, I think that Martin was going to present the work he's been working on the Pole 1. So I'm, is Martin online?
Yes, hello, this is Martin speaking.
Okay, hi Martin. I think that we had a kind of misunderstanding here. And so I'm going to post the presentation that for Nick to upload it because I thought that you would do it. So I apologize for this misunderstanding here, and I'm doing that right away. It should take a couple of seconds. And
so it's not the document, no?
No, well, there's a presentation that I would like that everybody, that Martin is going to give, and I would like everybody to have a look at the same time. I think it would make it easier. It's basically, it summarizes the issues in the document. Even though we assume that people have read the document, we figured out that it would be easier if we recall the main assumptions and what is at stake and what needs to get validated by the rock managers. so that we can identify initial stopper and go ahead.
Okay.
It's okay with you.
This is Martin speaking. I already sent this presentation to the Rogue Manager's mailing list a few minutes ago, so this can be also get from the mailing list.
So, I don't know, does everybody have access? I'll try and upload it to the agenda now. I'm not sure how successful I'll be. If you give me 1 minute, I'll try and upload, or at least I'll put, what I'll do is put the link, there's a link that Martin sent around, I'll put the link onto the agenda. Just quickly do this.
I also send this link to the chat window, so I can start the presentation as only you give me the sign. I can start it. So if everybody has it, then I can just start.
Okay. So I've put the link on the agenda. It's under slides on the. So if people refresh the browsers, if they've got the browsers open. If you refresh the agenda page, you'll see slides under the regional support operations model. So if you click on there, as I'm doing just at the moment, hopefully, although my link is very slow for some reason. Okay, so it opens the presentation. So I think we can probably start, Martin.
Okay, so this presentation will give you a summary of what we are going to do in this topic of regionalization of code model. Now I am passing to slide number 2, where there is goals and the agenda. So the goal of this presentation is to show the new model and the things we are going to do to all Rogue Managers and to validate it with all of you, because this model will be implemented at the Rogue level. Then the agenda for this presentation is that I will start with some reminder of how the code sheet looks today, then we'll pass to some glossary slides so we are sure that we are talking on the same, then the motivation for the new model, details of the implementation, then some assumptions that we need to take to implement this new model, then the roadmap for introducing the new operations model, and some details on Rogue responsibilities. Now passing to slide number 3. So currently the code sheets are organized, are shared between 11 teams, one team from each ROC, and the work is organized in rotating weekly shifts, meaning that each week there is one or two teams being on duty, taking the responsibility for overseeing entire grid infrastructure. So duty week for one team takes place each 5 or 4 weeks. Then there are two teams on duty because the workload is quite high, so we need two teams working together. And the separation of work between those teams is done by region basis, meaning that each team handles 5-6 different regions. And the duties during the shift, during the code shift, are twofold. So first is handling monitoring ARANs, meaning opening a new ticket or not if there is a problem at the site, or closing if the problem has been solved, and handling existing problems according to escalation procedure, meaning handling GIGAS tickets related to problems at time. Now passing to slide number 4, motivation for the R-code model comes from the from our experience is in running the current model. So running the current model, we sometimes notice that there could be a better cooperation between code and helpline support activity. This first line support activity is a regional activity provided by the region focused on solving problems at sites. Sometimes it happened the code was writing a ticket while the first line support and site was already working on the problem, or the problem was already solved, but this information was not yet propagated to higher level. We also think that with this new model we could improve on operational support process. Here we mean that code rarely had a chance for deeper problem analysis because of workload, and sites sometimes required a better support. We also think that we could formalize somehow place for this regional first line support, because this is a team working in the support structures, but in current code operations it didn't have its own place. we also could improve on experience sharing and knowledge building from the support process. Currently, it is organized as a kind of wiki page, which is a bit troublesome to maintain, to update, and so on. And we think that we could improve on that. I will say it later. And the last thing is preparation for EGI, NGI model, which is our future. So we wanted to somehow distribute code activity so it is no longer organized centrally, but we want to put more responsibility on regions and more autonomy on regions. So now passing to slide 5, the glossary slide. So the incident in this presentation will mean an occurrence of a problem at the site simply. Disregard if this is GSTAT failure, network connectivity, or some other problem, just an occurrence of a problem. Then a ticket. The ticket is a written report of an incident. So if incident is a long-standing, then the ticket needs to be registered in order to keep track of solving the problem. Now terminology from the new model. Regular code. Regular code means a code as it looks today. So what we do today, I will refer to as a regular code. Now, the R code, regional code, is a model towards which we are going. So the regional code is a team handling operational tickets in their respective region only. So this is a regional team provided by the region and dealing with sites within the region. Now, the first-line support means that this is a regional team handling with incidents. So namely, mainly in first 24 hours from the problem appearance, they are working with sites, they are overseen by the regional code. Their work is overseen by the regional code. And C code is a central code. There is only one instance of this team. This is a thin layer. This team is responsible for coordinating work of all R codes. And the regional support, first line support and R code activity together. Now passing to the next slide. These few slides, I will say some characteristics of the actors in this new model. So as you've seen, we introduced this first line support team. This team is assisting sites in solving operational problems within the region. So they need to have good technical skills because they not only notifying sites that there is a problem, but they use their own knowledge, their own experience to solve the problem with this site, to assist this site. They also, to solve the problem efficiently, they need efficient way of communication with site. In Central Europe, for example, we are using Instant Messenger for that, and this is very efficient in solving problems at sites. From the point of operational procedures, the place for the first line support team is within first 24 hours from the incident appearance. So they have 24 hours to solve the problem or to report that this cannot be solved in 24 hours. And the first line support uses the regional dashboard to communicate with sites, to communicate with our code also. Now passing to the slide number 7.
Hang on, Martin, I've got a quick question.
Yes?
So if the first line support can't solve or can't, yeah, if the ticket isn't solved within 24 hours, who do they pass it on to? Who do they inform of this? Is it the
If the incident is not solved within 24 hours, that means that the ticket needs to be created for this incident. Because in 24 hours, we are working on something called incident, which is only registered in regional dashboard.
Okay.
It doesn't have its own GIGAS ticket.
Okay, fine. So the idea would be at that point a GIGAS ticket would be created, but I guess it would still probably be the first line support that would help the site, is that true? Or?
Yes. The idea is that the first line support will not stop their activity after 24 hours. They will still help the site to solve the problem. But in the operational procedure, well, the main focus is in first 24 hours.
Okay. And then after that, the GIGAS ticket is created and that follows the usual path.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, now going to slide number 7, the profile of regional code, of R code. So this team is provided by each ROC, so we'll have 11 instances. They are focused on handling operational tickets. So not incident but ticket. So they don't have to have very good technical skills, but they need to be familiar with the procedures of handling operational tickets. So they handle incident older than 24 hours. This answers your question, Nick. So when the incident is standing longer, then they create a ticket for this. They communicate with first line support, of course, to clarify the situation at the site if it is, if there is something to be clarified. They also escalate cases to central court. If there is some incident which cannot be solved regionally, or incident which is related to software bug or something like that, then needs, this will be escalated to central court, something which cannot be solved within the region. The ARCOD responsibility is also overseeing the whole regional support activity, so they will also oversee how the first line support is working within the region. So now passing to slide number 8.
Okay, sorry, Martin, another question.
Yeah.
So I guess the distinction between the ARCOD and the first line support is a logical one, but they could theoretically be the same people. Is that right? They don't necessarily, not necessarily different people.
Yes. Yes, in principle, the ARCOD can be the same team as first line support, but functionally, we wanted just to emphasize this first line support activity, so there is a separate person created.
Okay, so it's a description of roles rather than people. Okay, that's fine. Okay,
continuing with slide number 8. So we have the profile of central code. So as I said, there is only one instance of this team, a few people probably. They are responsible for coordination of all regional code. This is very important because we want to avoid the situation when we create regional teams and all these teams just crawl in its own direction. So we need a central coordination, I think. The central code is also responsible for upgrading operational procedure manual and representing code at political level, so on weekly operations meeting. And the central code will also deal with evaluation of the operations in the region. So they will also see how the operations are going on, if it is going efficiently, if there are any problems. For this, they will have the ARCOD metrics. On the ARCOD metrics, I will have a separate slide.
Okay, Martin, another question. So who would you, maybe it's too early to ask, but who would you envisage staffing the central COD? Would it be from a central, like the OCC, or would it be made up from maybe from members of the regional CODs? Just wondering.
This is answered later in my presentation, so I can cover it right now or later.
Okay, fine. If it appears later, we'll cover it later. That's fine.
Okay, then slide number 9. This is an animated slide. So in the left bottom corner, you see a slide. Okay, this slide is on how the incident is handled in the new model. So on the left bottom corner, you have a slide. In the central, you have the original dashboard. And in the blue box, we will see time flow. So going the first step, we are on Monday evening, 7 p.m., some problem at the site appeared. This problem is automatically reported to the regional dashboard by monitoring tools, but unfortunately, at this hour, nobody is at work, so this problem just sits there. The next day morning, on Tuesday, 8 a.m., the site administrator comes to the to work and sees that there is a problem and look into the regional dashboard and can decide the next step, can decide whether he is able to solve this problem, or he can put a note in the regional dashboard that he is not able to solve the problem and request for help. Then the next step, we are Tuesday 9 a.m., so 1 hour later, when the first line support is available, the lady comes to work and looks into the regional dashboard, sees that there is some problem at the site in the scope, and starts next step, and starts problem assistance with the site, with the some communication means like Jabber or even phone call. So the interaction between first line support and site starts, and the next step is that they are, for example, not able to solve the problem until the end of the day. So on Tuesday 9 p.m., there are 24, the age of this incident is 24 hours. So this incident starts to become something which will be under the scope of the regional regional code. So the next step, on Wednesday morning, next step, the regional code comes to work and looks into the regional dashboard. The person sees that there is some incident 24 hours late, and the next step, the person will create a GIGAS ticket probably for this incident. So now we are in this bad situation when the incident cannot be solved, but we can also think that this incident has been solved with the help of first line support and no ticket is created and no work on code. Okay, are there any questions to this animated slide? Okay, if not, I'm passing on. So the next slide, slide number 10, shows you what happens next with the ticket. The red ellipse shows the changes to according to the current escalation procedure. So first ellipse shows you that we need to see if the problem was solved before 24 hours or not. So if the problem was solved, only some documentation need to be constructed related to the problem, if the problem is worth it. What kind of documentation will be, I will tell later. If the problem was not solved, the ticket is opened, and then escalation procedure comes. I don't want to go into much details, maybe I will just say a word on changes. So the ellipse number two is, this is the ticket state which is assigned to C code. Previously it was escalation to political instances. So this is a change. Now it is assigned to central code, then central code decides what to do. And the ellipse number three is on documentation. We wanted the operational documentation to be somehow generated from the support process. So we will require sites to document a bit the solution, so the solving this problem could help also others. So others can look into the ticket and derive from this ticket some valuable knowledge. But this need to be checked by the DR code that all tickets are, maybe all tickets will, which need this this kind of documentation are fulfilled. So this will be overseen by the DR code. And then if the documentation is in the ticket is closed. Any questions to slide number 10?
Yes, problems which can be solved fast, they will never be documented or...
These problems, which will be solved before 24 hours, we are considering documented in the following way. One way can be raising a GIGAS ticket, which is already closed, just containing the description of the problem and the problem solution. This is one way. But this way we will make unnecessary GIGAS tickets. However, they will be closed, so no TPM, no code will look at this ticket, but they will just exist in GIGAS and be searched by the GIGAS knowledge-based mechanism or whatever, how it is called. So this can be done like that, and maybe it should be expressed in this diagram, but this is not yet settled. And we also expect that the regions may decide to organize the documentation on their own way. I mean, the region can set up a wiki page, and for problems which will be solved quickly, the R-code may require the site to complete, maybe not R-code, but the first line support and site may decide to document this solution in a wiki page.
In that case, it will only be regional use of the documentation.
Sorry, could you please repeat?
In that case, the documentation will only be seen by the same region, if I understand correctly.
Yes, I didn't say that we expect. Okay, the GIGAS search mechanism can index not only GIGAS tickets but also regional wiki pages. So we would suggest a solution for regions for documenting problems, which is publicly visible, something like a wiki page, even weblog or HTML pages, which then can be pointed from the GIGAS search mechanism. That way, this knowledge can be searched and accessed through the one access point, namely the GIGAS search mechanism.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, now passing to slide number 11. Oh, this is about knowledge sharing. So this is almost what I said. We think that this knowledge on solving the problems is produced at the technical layer, so somewhere in between first-line support and sites. And these are the teams which shall be responsible for building this knowledge. And the knowledge base can be built in two modes. In implicit, where the knowledge is built as a kind of side effect of support process. For example, it is put into the GIGAS ticket. Or explicit, when the knowledge is built in a kind of recipe which need to be written by someone in form of a wiki page or something like that. Both modes has their advantages and disadvantages. What we wanted to do in this new model, we just wanted to make sure that the knowledge is being produced somehow from the process, from the support process. And this solution with the GIGAS tickets is, we hope, is working like that. And also the C code, the central code, shall make some recommendation to regions how to organize their own knowledge sharing facilities. Okay, I'd like to go to slide number 12 on R-code metrics. So these R-code metrics are necessary for evaluation of operations process. While introducing this new R-code model in regions, we just want to be sure that the operations process is not disturbed by that. And we want to collect these R-code metrics. They will be also helpful for taking decisions if the next regions are safe to join this model. And the examples of these metrics are a number of tickets opened during some period, so we see if the R-code is working, number of tickets expired which are not handled, which shouldn't happen simply, a number of closed alarms, so we see if the alarms rise for the sites are handled or not. And now slide number 13.
Martin,
yep.
I have a question. So would we say that, are you saying that a region won't move to the R-code model unless they achieve certain metrics? Is that what?
We want to move to the R-code model gradually. I mean, we don't want to go in one shot. We just want to move first four regions. I will also say about this later. And then if the evaluation of the first four regions is successful, then we will migrate the rest of the region. Not rest, but the next part.
Okay. I think we need to keep in mind that we really have to get all regions by the end of next year into this model.
Yes, Nick, just a couple of lines here. I think it's important not to break the stability of operations, and we need to make sure as we learn, as we go along, we need to make sure that more or less the model will be sustainable. So that's why we think going in different, in at least two phases, in trying to see what are the what tools we need as R-code metrics to assess the green light to get into the next step, next phase.
Okay, no, I agree that this should be a phased approach. We shouldn't try and do everybody at the same time. But at the same time, we have the boundary condition that all rocks have to be in this mode by the end of EG3. We don't have a choice in this. This is not a, I can remember we had this discussion before, we don't have the choice of some rocks not being in this mode. because after EG3 there's no more EG, it's EGI. So we don't have the plan has to have all regions moving to this model. Now, I agree that we have flexibility and we should phase it and we can choose the order that the regions go, but we need to keep this in mind as a boundary condition.
Just a last remark before Martin can go on. I just would like to remark that, of course, the detailed roadmap will be established after this today's discussion so that we can see which federations is ready to go by when and like. But I would like to emphasize also that we haven't had answers at the time from the Marchand's questionnaire in June. Three federations still have not answered to the questionnaire that Matt Marchand had sent out. And I'm wondering if all federations will go to that regional model.
Okay,
that's
well,
just a question.
Okay, well, when you say will they go, they have no choice. There will not be a non-regional model after EG3. So it's not a question of will they go. Yes, they will go. They have absolutely no choice at all. So maybe what we need to do is not just now, but maybe offline after the meeting, discuss who the three regions are and make sure that they have submitted questionnaire so that everybody has an idea of when they expect to be moving.
Nick, just to make that point clear, it's not to get into detail now, and anyhow, that will come out with the establishing of the roadmap in the weeks to come, at the latest by Addington. So we have to take that offline, sure.
Okay, thanks. I just wanted to make it clear to the other rocks that this isn't an optional thing. This is mandatory, absolutely. It's a boundary condition, we can't move. So, okay, thanks. We can move on.
Okay, so moving to the slide number 13, we start the review of assumptions we take into account during the closer thinking on the new model. So the assumption number one says that all actors will use the same dashboard provided by the operations portal, meaning that the site, first line support, the R-code and C-code team will use the same dashboard. Of course, the views in this dashboard will be altered to their role. The new player here is a site which will have the possibility to look at the alarms and at the tickets assigned to the site. And the R-code and first line support will have the same view in the portal. A difference in roles will be taken into account through authorization settings, and this allow to refine responsibilities of the teams freely. So the ROC will have the possibility to adapt the roles according to the organization of this activity within the region. And the R-code will also have the possibility to oversee the full all duties expected from the R-code and first-line support together. So this was on the dashboard, slide number 14. We say that we will use GIGAS for opening ticket to sites by R-code. So the prototype of the dashboard will not implement integration with regional help desk because this is difficult to develop and maintain. This would need the interaction with the regional help desk developer. This is a bit troublesome. And this kind of integration was already done with GIGAS, so we'll just use GIGAS, and none of the first four federations joining the R-code model requires the support for regional help desk, so this is also okay with them. The next slide, 15, regards the escalation procedure for regions. So for the beginning, the escalation procedure will be almost exactly the same as we use in a regular code. So all time limits for tickets will be copied. There is only one change, that the last step, which was escalation to political instances, will be replaced by escalation to central court. And here you have the examples what shall be escalated to central court. So for example, incidents standing longer than 72 hours without the ticket assigned, this need to be escalated to secret because this means that the regional court is not working for at least 2 days. The tickets with expiration date passed 3 days ago. This also means that somebody is not working for 3 days because the escalation of the expiration date for the ticket shall be set accordingly. Also, the tickets which are 30 days old still not solved, probably needs to be escalated to CCOT because there is some long-standing problem, and maybe CCOT will be interested in that. And we foresee that there will be ability to refine escalation procedure within the region. But this will happen under well-defined conditions. For example, if the region is able to reach overall 90% availability, which means that the operations works good, then the region will be allowed probably to adapt the escalation procedure according to their feeling. And that's it about slide number 15. Going to slide number 16, assumption number 4. This is on the transition from what we have now, from the regular code to R code. This is also what Unique asked. This will not take in one go. So the two systems will coexist for some time. This time depends on the availability of tools and the state of operations in the regions. So if the tools will be available, for example, dashboard, and the AirCode metrics will show that the workload on central code is minimal and operations are stable, then this will mean green light for passing to the next step. Now about the staffing to central code. We think that at the beginning, central code duties will be provided by the federations joining the R-code model. We plan that first four federations will start the R-code model, and people from these first four federations will also be responsible for doing central code duties. This is, we think so because these people will know the details of the new model, will know what shall be escalated to CCOT, what the CCOT shall do in which case, and this is very important that they are from the process they are also doing the CCOT, so we are not just lost because some communication problem or something like that. So at the beginning this will be staffed from the R-code team, probably from the first federation. For the longer term, I don't know. I must say I don't know how this shall be staffed. I think these people shall be somehow involved in the R-code, those doing this central code. Okay, federations joining regional code will be allowed to quit regular code shifts. So that way we avoid doubling amount of work on the people because they will have new duties, regional code, and they will just quit regular, what we do now. They will not have to do that. Yes, and the regular code shifts will be provided by the remaining federations, by those who not moved to regional code. Any questions to that slide? If not, then passing to slide number 17, this assumption number 5. This assumption is a result of our discussion what we could impose on regions and what we shouldn't impose. For example, we think that we cannot impose a way of doing first-line support internally. This is completely up to the ROC to organize the first-line support. This is a regional activity. But, however, there are some requirements from the project that need to be fulfilled. Otherwise, the whole model will not work. And this needs to be ensured. And in the document, if you read this, you will find this mandatory optional terms. And this means that mandatory means it needs to be provided to the project, otherwise the model will not work. And this mandatory can be shared either, can be done, this activity which is mandatory can be done either by the first line support or our code. If the first line support is missing, then it must be done by the regional code. Now, slide number 18. The roadmap. So as I said, the roadmap will be gradual. The timeline for this roadmap is depends on the availability of procedures. So these procedures are more or less, I would say rather more, written already in the document, in the PDF file. And the according to tools, we need a dashboard, new dashboard be in place. This is almost done. It's promised by the end of October, by the end of this month. and we give ourselves 1 month for testing and improvements, and then we expect that on Code 18 in Abingdon we will be able to train first four federations and start the R-Code model. These first four federations are enumerated here. And we give 6 months for evaluation of operations in these first four federations. And then if the evaluation is positive, the next four regions will join. So after 12 months, we will have all regions in the new working in a new scheme. Of course, this timeline can be fine-tuned if there is some needs from the federations and so on. And now slide number 19, ROC responsibility. So the main responsibility for the ROC is to assure the manpower for this new model. This activity, I mean this R-Code and first line support, can be run as a one team. This can be the same persons or two separated teams communicating between them. For example, in Central Europe, we'll use this second option. The effort can come from the task TSA 1.2.1 and TSA 1.2.3 of WBS. Amount of work on the teams depends on how they share responsibilities between them and the level of support provided by first-line support. I see a place for ROC to modify the first-line support duties according to their regional needs. The first-line support can assist sites, can just notify sites, can just respond to requests for support, something like that. This is up to the ROC. We think that all regional support activities should fit within one full-time equivalent, which will ensure that there is one person being on duty handing alarms and tickets in the region. So together, first-line support and ARCO should evaluate to one FTE, we think. Technical requirements to start the regional code are very simple. The C-code staff need just to be registered in GoDB, and that's it, related to technical requirements. The last slide of my presentation is just a reference to the ARCO model description document. So from my side, that's all. Thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions if you have.
Hey, Marcin, this is Antonio. Just I've gone quickly through the document, so I haven't read it yet, but there is one particular kind of incident that deals with may occur when there is a software problem. So if a software problem is found, this causes malfunctioning at the site. So this kind of incident is currently, so the way of handling this kind of incident is currently unspecified in the current model. And so the approaches used by the different ROCs are different. Either the corresponding gigastigat is closed or is set once solved. And this may affect at some point the quality metrics. Just as an observation, maybe, I don't know whether you already do in your document, but maybe that among the responsibility of the C-code, there should be also the setup of guidelines for dealing with cases like this one. So, in particular, ways of handling tickets that may have an effect on the quality metrics. Did you already consider cases or level of detail in your document, or you simply don't?
Regarding the security software problems, we were considering it as a kind of urgent problem, also of a kind of in this category, also security problems will come. So we foresee kind of quick escalation for this kind of problem. So this problem will be reported by the first line support, then ticket created by the original code immediately, and immediately escalated to central code. So this is propagated also to other regions. The central code will also have the possibility to contact each of the regional codes. So this kind of a problem will be escalated to central code immediately and then quickly escalated down to the region so they are aware of the problem. So in terms of procedure, this was already designed, but I don't know if we need a special treatment of this problem related to quality metrics.
Well, I think that the idea of escalating quickly to the central code is good because the communication and spreading this information is quite important in these cases. What I'm saying is that this, although you escalate immediately, normally these kind of issues stay open for a long time when it comes with something that has to be fixed by a software release. In that case, I think that we should perhaps define a policy on how to handle the GIGAS tickets open in this context. And
doesn't user support already have? I think user support has a... I know, I can remember Maria saying that in user support, I think they closed the ticket as unsolved with a reference to a Savannah.
I think this is
a Savannah bug or something like
that. This is a practice, but I'm not sure that there is an official guideline on how to deal with it.
Whether it's written down, I'm not sure, but I can remember it coming up at an operations meeting, and it was stated by the user support people that that's what.
That's the way that Sam sort of treats things, and it makes the distinction between the common definition of incident versus problem. So GIGAS is more an incident resolution mechanism, and then Savannah is more the problem solving.
Okay, but no, I mean it should be clear.
Maybe just needs to be advertised more.
Yeah, just to be clear that the metrics of the regional codes are not affected
exactly by long-standing GIGAS tickets. Okay. Any other questions?
Yes, this is Tiziana. I have a, can you hear me?
Yes, we can, yes.
Okay. I have a question regarding one of the assumptions that were described by Martin, and it's in particular assumption number 2, which is described on slide number 14. In this assumption, you said that given the difficulty of porting the dashboard to different regional help desks, we assume that just the GIGAS tickets will be opened. And my impression is that if this is the case, then what is the reason of having regional systems? Because typically, if you have a regional problem which is very much localized, then typically you would expect to use the local ticketing system, or you would. It would be nice to have this possibility open. So is that an assumption just due to the fact that there is not enough manpower for porting the dashboard? Shall we also say that teams that are willing to interface the dashboard to their own regional ticketing system are invited to do development work? Because I think having the possibility to interface the dashboard with the regional system would be an important option. So this is one comment. The other one is about next slide, which is number 15, assumption number 3. And one suggestion I would have is that the limits that are described in this slide, for example, the 72 hours, the 3 days, etc., are actually tailored according to the needs of a region. In general, I wouldn't say that we need really fix the thresholds in this escalation, but we may have some regions that are just willing to provide an infrastructure with a lower level of availability, and for them a different escalation thresholds would be applicable or more suitable. So that's all.
Okay, so I will start with answer to this regional help desk. With regional headers, we have, I would say, several problems when applying this new model. If we assume that we will use regional headers, then we have a problem with the communication. Because the access to the regional helpdesk is only given to the regional code, and when the problem needs to be escalated to central code, then it becomes, well, it requires a special mechanism for this central code to see this kind of problem. Even if the other regional code team requires to see the problem from the other region, then there is a problem with seeing that. There is also a problem in knowledge sharing mechanism. If the tickets are only in the regional dashboard, then it is somehow difficult to apply the GIGAS knowledge sharing mechanism to this regional headers. These tickets would have to be somehow escalated from the regional headers to central headers for the sake of knowledge sharing. And one big advantage of the regional help desk, as I see that, was that it limits the amount of work that because the problems from the region are not escalated to the global layer, which means that the TPM does not have to deal with that. But the operational tickets are quite different than those which are dealt with by the TPM. The operational tickets are created in GIGAS and assigned directly to sites, so TPM doesn't see that. So there is no scalability problem in terms of processing these tickets. So from that region, we decided to avoid somehow regional help desk, and there are also not all regions have this regional header, so we consider that somehow not very, let me say, important.
Mm-hmm.
And regarding to your question on the escalation procedure, the main difference between the model we have now and the new model is that in the new model we expect that there is a person on duty each day. So not a weekly shift, but there is a person dealing with tickets each day. So that's why we put this 72 hours limit to slide. But if there are justified needs to extend or as you say tailor this limits in the region, then I'm not against it. It can be done.
This is John here. Remember though that we have the SLA between the current rocks and sites, and so we're still looking at sort of EGE-wide values as opposed to letting everyone go off and do their own things. So as you say, if they're very justified, then perhaps, but I don't think that it should be the norm.
I think the conclusion here can be like these limits shall be configurable, and why there is a need for configuration, then this needs to be somehow justified and agreed, and that's it.
And one last thing on this is that I think we have to start with a common recommendation. And as things prove stable with time, I think we can provide some flexibility in this configuration in the second part of the project.
Okay.
And, well, last thing on these limits, these are 7 to 2 hours working hours, not including weekends.
Mm-hmm. No, but it's just a general, it's not just a comment because of the number, which is not enough. It's just a general remark that if you have a region that has different requirements or different levels of target availability, then it would be just normal for them to have thresholds that are more suitable to them. So that's why.
Okay, any more questions? No? Okay, so I guess the next steps, I don't know if, are the next steps already defined, or do we need to define those now, Helene and Martin?
Okay. Martin, you want to add something?
No, Helene, please go on.
Next steps is depending on the feedback and that we have here, we plan on modifying case prototype so that we can start as app, because the prototype is almost ready according to the lines that have been presented here. And basically the roadmap is, as Martin mentioned, is that the plan is hopefully to start the training of first federations on this model in Abingdon. And I think that will correspond with the release of version 1 of the dashboard, regional dashboard. And to come back to Tiziana's comment, I think that in later stages, I think it's bound to maybe have some regional flavors of this dashboard, but I don't foresee that we can start with that right now, and so that needs to be later as we see how the operation is fit our needs or not.
Okay.
More precisely, Nick, what did you...
No, that's fine. I think that's fine. So my only other question is, when do people need to give the feedback on the document that you sent around? What's the deadline for that?
I submitted it yesterday, and a lot of many rock managers are more or less aware of that because of their implications in the cut business, I had foreseen that if people had something against or so initial stopper to raise, that would be today. Now, if we need a deadline, I would say hopefully let's take a week or something.
Okay. Okay, so if we say a week today, so by the next SA1 coordination meeting, people are...
Okay, we're having one next week.
I think so, yes. Because there's a lot of things going on at the moment, so we'll probably have one a week.
Okay.
Okay, so if we say that if people want to give feedback, then they have to do it before... they have to do it by the end of Monday next week, which is the 27th.
No, prior to the last meeting.
Okay, then. Okay, so for what I hear now, do you consider discussion is almost over on this topic, Nick?
I think so. I don't see any. I don't see anybody with serious, anything to say against the proposal. There are sort of a few details and questions, but it doesn't sound like anybody's really coming up with the fundamental issues of it.
Okay, so we go ahead with the polishing of the prototype then, and go ahead as usual. But we are happy to take the feedback and for further steps when they come.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, fine. Anybody else with any last questions on this topic? No, okay, let's move on. We're running a little bit late. Planning the EGI transition deliverable. So this is the thing that MITRE has been gathering input for. We have to provide something to the project office, to NA1, by Thursday of this week. So this is probably the last chance we'll get to discuss this, certainly on the phone. Let me just find the document open. I can find it. So there's a link on the agenda. I don't know if people have been able to read through this. This is so MITRE has taken the input from the various tasks and rocks and tried to massage it into a single document and bring it all together. So I guess the first thing is, well, we could either go through this, but I'm just wondering if we have time to do that now. Does anybody have any comments on the document? Are people, even if the comment is you haven't had time to read it?
Well, I got disconnected. It's Ognin. Could you tell me what document you're referring to now?
Sorry, this is the one. So there's a link on the agenda under planning an EGI transition. It's a EDMS document, but it's It's the one, okay, there are a lot of documents in that folder. It's the one called DNA 1.4 SA1.doc. I'm not sure when.
I've got some comments, yeah.
Okay. Okay, so let's give us a comment. Yeah, absolutely.
So my comments are the following. Okay, I can see that the general transition philosophy in most of the things is from the centralized to regional and then eventually to NGIs. I strongly support the regional dimension because it has been working for us, and I'm glad that things are going that way. On the other hand, I've seen quite a few comments from these individual documents on that link, like from Thorsten and James and from Antonio and from Thomas. We have different people pointing out that there is not enough technical detail in the blueprint, that they cannot, on the basis of that, they cannot really understand the transition strategy, at least from the what the GI is envisaging, and therefore cannot formulate the path towards that. So this is really the message that I get from people who do concrete technical work.
Okay.
There, like James says, not enough technical detail in EGI, not enough effort available even now to do the parts which are supposed to add towards the transition, such as regional accounting. Then Thorsten was skeptical about the FTEs and whether it's enough FTEs for central user support in EGI.org, whereas there is quite a lot of effort for some trainings which he doesn't find relevant, and so on. So I have this feeling that we haven't really expressed our lack of current efforts to deal with the transition, and also our technical understanding what the EGI vision is and how we're going to get there within EG. Yeah.
Okay.
So this is my overall comment. I mean, I'll send a mail, which maybe will be a little bit more concrete, as compared to what I'm saying now.
Okay,
so
that's
my general comment here. I don't know whether people feel like that.
Okay, so I've got one supplementary question that actually occurred to me last week, and I completely forgot to ask everybody. So this, because people talk of the blueprint, but there are in fact two documents. There is one called the blueprint, which is very, very brief and says almost nothing of any substance that we could use. But then there's another one, I can't remember the title of it, but I think it's
DF functions.
D3.1, yeah. So it's the one with more details. It's sort of more than one page of information. So I guess the first thing is I'm hoping everybody is talking about the second document, the one that's got more meat in it. I guess from what you said, Ognin, that sounds like the one that you've been referring to. But I'm hoping that other people, when we talk about we should be more clear on this, because we're not actually talking about the blueprint, we're talking about the supplementary document. The blueprint is so high level, it's, for our purposes, it's pretty inconsequential. We can't really use that. But it's the other one. I can't remember the name of the second document. Can you remember it, Ognin? Do you have it?
Yeah, it's 3.1 EGI functions, first definition.
EGI functions, okay. So I just wanted to make sure that everybody is referring to that document and not the official blueprint document. So that it was just a comment, really, just to make sure we're all, as they say, reading from the same page. Okay, so sorry, Ognin, I interrupted your flow.
Well, my flow finished. I have a feeling that our technical leaders in different fields do not have, again, a clear understanding, and it's not probably their fault at all. What is the EGI vision of operations, and then how do we link into that, and whether we have enough effort to go in that direction, or whether we understand technically which direction this be. But for example, we don't even know if we want to have a single help desk per country. This is something that I think it's too much. Although the EGI, EGI doesn't say that, and so on. So, there's quite a few examples like this. Yeah, and I raised a couple of examples from James regarding regional accounting, and Thorsten user support, and Thomas about resource allocation at the central level, which is said that it will be carried out by EGI, but it's not really very clearly explained, and so on.
Okay. I mean, personally, that's my instinct, my feeling as well. So, does anybody else have any input, any comments on specific points, or overall on the document? Either on the EGI document or the document that MITRE has put together.
This is James here. Just to clarify one thing, I mean, I think that we have to be clear between what the vision is and what the strategy is. I mean, the document is heavy on vision and light on strategy, I think, is the thing. Like, there's a big gap from going to, say, you should do accounting databases to saying you need one FTE to run a central GovDB-like thing. And there's no, what I find missing is the middle bit that bridges the two, something that gives you a sense that these numbers are more than just things pulled out of air, and something that you could actually build a work plan around and actually get some sort of time scales. At the minute, we sort of have to make it all up, except that we get told EGI is not just a continuation of EGI, except that we're still getting told, well, we have to do the strategy work.
So there's a big gap there. I mean, I really agree with James. So I don't know how we can voice this or how we can include this in EGI deliverable or how we can voice it to EGI.
I mean, my thinking was, because I agree as well, my thinking was, all the best we can do is make a whole lot of assumptions and list these somewhere and say, right, given these assumptions, then here is what we're going to do. So, for example, one of the assumptions, I don't know if we have John Gordon on the line, but I know at the last meeting he was saying, and I strongly agree with this, that we should, that whatever plans we have, whatever strategy we put in place, should be for regionalizing the model we have at the moment. So moving things to the rocks, to the regions, and not beyond that. We shouldn't be looking at, you know, breaking it down into the individual NGIs of all the different countries, because I mean, well, personally, I don't think we've got. I'm not sure that falls under the EG remit. And secondly, I don't think we've got time and effort to do it. I mean, does anybody disagree? Do other people think we should do this down to a country level, down to an EG NGI level?
This is Claire from the UK. No, I agree with you, because the main concern is that there won't be an NGI at the end of EG3. I mean, for example, in the UK, because the NGI is a legal entity. And I think moving it to the ROC level is more than sufficient.
Yeah. Okay. So I think that was something I was going to suggest.
I didn't understand. There will be no NGI in the UK by the end of EG3?
Sorry,
I didn't understand what you said.
We don't know that for sure, because the NGI has to be a legal body, and at the moment none of the UK grids that would be able to step into the shoes are legal bodies.
I can imagine some of these things, you know, can take a lot of bureaucracy, a lot of time to set up. So, I can imagine that. If we try and do things, if we try and structure a model around the NGIs and moving everything to NGIs, and then we don't have any NGIs to move it to, we could be in a lot of trouble. So I think, I mean, personally, my personal feeling is that we have to work within the constraints of the EG project. And so we can decentralize, we can regionalize where it's appropriate and as much as possible, as much as we can in the time we have. But I think that's as far as we can go. I think to the rocks is as far as we should go. I mean, I'll send out an email with my comments to the various documents as well. But if anybody disagrees with that, you know, please do say so.
Hi, Nick. I just have a comment on overall. Basically, I would like to say that in documents, operational tools are referred as something that is rather global. And I would like to distinguish the central tools for operations, and not to mention it is the operation dashboard that is going to be version one is going to be built at the moment, and also how do SA1 feels about the operations portals as far as broadcast functions are concerned. I think it's not that clear how these the regionalization should be handled, and I think it's to us to foresee that and to drive the future evolution, and that can't be regionalized, to my understanding. So we have a big difference between operational tools and monitoring tools that can be automatized, and maybe some SLA portal that can be that can take the data out of these automated tools. But I think there's a couple of issues here concerning proper operations that need to be run smoothly daily, and for which the operations portals and dashboard are important. And I don't think that's the regionalization to the region is a simple answer to that one.
Okay, so let me recap so I understand. So you're saying that you don't think regionalization of every tool and portal we have is necessarily the correct way to go. All right.
I just think that it needs to be separated from plain monitoring tools that could be decentralized at the site level.
Okay,
so basically
we need to think about whether for each tool, for each thing we have, we need to think whether or not it's decentralization is a good thing or not. Is that what you're saying?
Basically, yes, for manpower to maintain, but also for the stability of operations. What makes sense? And I think that EGI will not come out with single recommendation at that level of details. That needs to come from us. Well.
Okay. Well, okay. I mean, yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you, in fact, that not necessarily everything will work more efficiently or is technically a better solution if it's decentralized. So on that respect, I agree with you. I think, though, in the EGI blueprint, as far as I can remember, it does make it fairly clear that they do want to, basically every NGI would like to be, or they would like to set it up so that every NGI can be autonomous. So they could have their own set of tools, in which case that would imply full decentralization. So maybe what we need to do is look at all of the tools we have and make recommendations to in this thing that we're putting together now to give to the project office, the EG project office, who will give it to EGI. Maybe in there we should give recommendations on, look, we don't think tool X and Y and Z should be decentralized because they're more efficient and work better if they run centrally.
Or at least they should have a catch-all instance. I mean, that's the same thing that's happening with the GovDB.
Yeah. So the catch-all, they do also say that it, you know, in EGI they could have a catch-all instance, but then we need to think about if there's a catch-all instance. I mean, I think the implicit assumption is that each NGI will be able to have a regional view or a national view within that central tool. So, which would in itself imply development of the tool. So I think these things, I think it would be useful, I think, if we have a quick think, if the relevant rocks that are running these things now have a think and can give input onto.
Yeah, especially because
this is an OAT thing, actually, I'm not sure.
Especially because I'm thinking about the financing aspect of it, and it seems that the adaptation of the tools, we shouldn't. I foresee it will be a hard time to have them ready at the end of EG3. Then it would make a transition matter, and then it would be a kind of some call for tender or call for project financing to the EU, which is not that sure. So
yeah.
We need to make sure that this operational tool, broadcast functions, whatever, and VOID card functions, whatever is to be felt to be core by the project is maintained.
No, absolutely. I mean,
there's no way we cannot rely on some EU financing that is not certain at all.
No, exactly. And we, in fact, I mean, one of the questions that are being asked is, what do we think we will not be able to do in the timeframe of EG3? So that anything that anybody spots that they think we don't have the time or the effort to do by the end of EG3, but does need to be done, then that should definitely be raised. We should definitely have that as input to anyone.
Yeah, but I do think also that if we have some recommendations within SA1, then we'll all find a way to achieve it. It's just a matter also to start the recommendations. Because if everybody feels, or most of the rocks feel convinced that we do need such a function to be there at the end of EG3, then I think the manpower can be found. It's just a matter of necessity.
Okay. Yeah. I mean. Okay. But yeah. But I guess the statement stands. If anybody does feel that there's just too much in a particular area to do before the end of EG3, then they should flag it. Because that's exactly the sort of thing that anyone would want to know. Okay, any other comments from anybody, either on MITRE's document or on the EGI document?
Yes, I have. This is Susanna speaking. I have a question for clarification about The second, I think, yes, the second bullet point under main steps involved for each key task. This is probably a question for James. Text says, for the operations tools, a redesign of all tools according to the operations automation strategy, etc., will be done in parallel to running and maintaining the present set of tools. What does that mean from an implementation point of view?
So this basically means that the tools are currently working on their work plans, and we hope by around December to present a set of work plans from all the various tools on how they actual on the actual work items they think they need to do inside the tools to meet the strategy.
Mm-hmm.
So this is in fact what the GOCDB presented the first version of briefly at the SA1 meeting in Turkey. And the CIC portal and dashboard gave a very brief sense of where they were as well, and we hope to do this for the rest of the tools as well.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something that, this in fact, I didn't write that. Maite wrote that as something she wants from the tools. So she really wants to see the work plans that the tools have currently on board for how they meet some of these, how they meet the strategy, in fact.
And I guess from reading it, I think she's also saying that this, so exactly what James just described, has to be done in parallel to, we can't stop.
Okay.
Tools we already have. We have to keep them going. We have to fix any problems. Right.
And in fact, it's the same effort is the point. That,
yeah, exactly.
The same effort. We'll have to write this and work out their new work plan, yeah, as well as doing their ongoing support. So they need to show how they balance that, in fact.
So, yeah, exactly. So this is the sort of thing that we need to take into account when we're thinking of what we want to do ideally by the end of BG3. Of course, if we've got two streams of work that need to carry on and they both need 100% of somebody and that somebody is the same person, then obviously all of that work can't be done. So this is exactly, I guess, what's implied here is a little bit of careful project planning. So basically, it's not only do we have enough FTEs to do the work that we need, those FTEs need to know the correct stuff. They need to have the sufficient background in whatever it is they need to work on. So, for example, GOCDB, if we needed, you know, four people to be developing, or two people to maintain the current one, two people to develop all the new stuff for the regionalization, then that probably wouldn't work because we wouldn't even be able to train up enough people to work on that. So these sort of constraints, who's going to do what and when, need to be taken into account. And if people think they see any potential areas where these constraints mean that work can't be finished by the end of BG3, then that stuff needs to be flagged.
Okay, I have just a quick question on that one. So this roadmap from all the tools will be ready by the end of the year, more or less. So the question is, to implement such a priority choices in hierarchy that you're mentioning, Nick, how is that going to happen and where?
You mean who will decide what gets worked on?
Yes.
At the first instance, I guess it would be, so the OAT are pulling together the strategy and the planning for the automation of the tools. And then if it's becoming clear that there is a lack of effort, because the same people that need to be developing the tools are also needing to maintain and run the current set, then I would say that probably needs to be raised here to the SA1 coordination.
Yeah, what I'm thinking is just there's not only a lack of effort, is there also maybe a need to try to be sure that we cover a whole coherent set of whatever it takes to have smooth operations.
That's inside the OAT. That's what we do.
That's the automations of the tools. But what I'm saying is about how we what do people feel that it's needed to have coherent operations and smooth operations goes beyond automation.
No. Okay. So the OAT is maybe now is a bit of a misnomer. I think the OAT are looking at the entire set of tools that we have and making sure that any strategy that we move forward with is applied across the tools. So any dependencies between the tools are taken into account when any new functionality is required. So it's the job of the OAT to make sure that this stuff is coherent, that we end up with a coherent set of tools at the end of the day that do what we want to do.
Okay, but how will that be decided, that an instance needs to be centralized or regionalized, and in which portion of it? I'm talking about this kind of coherence.
I don't know if there's a decision already been made. Is everything being regionalized?
No. I mean, we regionalize where possible. So this comes out from the development teams. They say there's a certain amount of, A, what is possible with the effort they have. I mean, it's an iterative process. So they say, you know, the region, for instance, take your example. The dashboard, the operations dashboard could say, it's going to take us 3 months to regionalize the current dashboard for a regional view. And in order to give regional dashboards out, it's going to take 6 months of packaging effort and rewriting to use a new DB, and it's going to take this, and it's going to take this, or it's going to take a year and a half, therefore it doesn't fit in. So then we take the pragmatic view and say, and we would bring to the ROC managers and to the OCC these two options and say, it will take 3 months to do this, it will take 1.5 years to do this. We believe that this fits in the current work plan. If we had one FTE extra, we could squeeze the other one in. What do you think? What do we deprioritize? So we can make the technical evaluation, present options to the ROC managers who basically provide the manpower, and operational management who provide the overall strategy. So I think it's this meeting where we will bring this up.
So they
bring the information back so that the ROC managers can make a decision, basically.
Fine. Exactly what I foresee that will happen. Fine. The only thing is, you will also have another arbitrage to do also with operational dashboard, operation portal development versus dashboard development. And so I think that is also you have a pragmatic view, and that's fine. I'm talking also about the fact that what people feel that it's needed to be stressed upon, and may come also from another tool, and that needs to be put in balance, and that goes beyond also this pragmatic view.
So the OAT is the place where the different tool developers get together and discuss their common strategy, their problems, their overlap, their missing effort, what goes where, who does what. That's the forum where that technical discussion is done in terms of the tool development. Out of that comes certain strategic decisions that need to be made that are essentially influenced by manpower or overall strategy. For me, those decisions come out of the OAT. That information comes out of the OAT, comes up to the ROC managers and the OCC for a decision to be made. We take that decision back into the OAT and say, the decision is, this is dropped, this is regional. If that's all we can do, we do this. And then we do the technical work again, the technical plan again, so reworked with that new information coming from the ROC managers. And if there are people who are, you know, if there are main tools, I think we have everybody covered. But if there are main tool developers who are, you know, at the level of a couple of FTEs who are not represented in the OAT right now, and they're actually contributing significant effort, then we should get them in.
Yeah.
Basically, they should be there, having access to the same information and being part of those discussions.
So from a project management, I mean, these are all projects that build up into a larger project or a program. So basically each tool, how I would see it working, each tool will work on their own task list to say, okay, these are the options we have for our tool. We can regionalize it and take this long and take this much effort. Or we can have a central instance that shows regional views, and it will take this much effort to do that. So that each tool will come back to the OAT with these numbers, with this information. And then the OAT will sit down and look at the dependencies between the tools. And, okay, if we change tool X, then we have to change tool Y accordingly. So the interdependencies between the tools are taken into account. And from that point, so basically that's a project plan. And then you can start to see, as we have it at the moment, the project plan runs until 2015, so we need to change something. So then any problems that are seen arising from the plan would be brought to the SA1 coordination meeting with one or two options put forward for different strategies. The ROC managers and the people at the SA1 coordination meeting would discuss them, come up with the preferred strategy. That would be taken back to the OAT to clarify the plan. Does that make sense?
All what I'm saying is I think that what comes out of the recommendations from the developers should be somehow assessed also by the ROC managers, so that not only in case of problems of pragmatic views on FTEs and manpower problems.
Okay, I think we need to take this one offline. I'm not sure the ROC managers are the right people to make detailed decisions on the exact functionality of specific tools. The ROC managers are basically, I can't remember the term now, but basically they're the steering committee for a project. They're the top level. You don't take the nitty gritty detail to them because they don't. I mean, I couldn't, I use some of these tools, and I couldn't give you a decision on the exact nitty-gritty detail of what should and shouldn't happen in particular.
I think this is why we have representatives for the ROCs, for the sites, and in fact, many of the tool developers hold double hats as user of these tools in roles in the CIC and the ROC.
This is Susanna speaking. I think I'm most in favor with what Len said, in the sense that you're true when you say that we have ROC representatives in OAT, but there is not a formal way to gather input from the ROCs so that these representatives can actually bring and represent the opinions of all the ROCs we have in EG.
I think that's something we have to set up. I believe that the ROC and the site representatives sort of hold a dual role. They provide immediate decisions from their own experience doing that thing, and also they're the people who can represent the OAT and go out and find this information from the ROC manager, so it's not always coming through me. I mean, they're the representatives of the OAT who should know who to go and talk to, and so maybe we need to run through a couple of these information gathering exercises with them doing it and try and work out a process for doing this so that we can get that input in. So, we'll take some of the questions that come up and run through the process of actually going to the ROCs, doing a survey, getting the information back, and see how that works for us.
And in fact, I think that actually the ROC managers may not be the best technical persons that can say something about the tools, but basically we represent the users of the tools. Of the other tools. So I think this input has to be taken into account.
Right. So that's a good point. So we can formalize some sort of process for gathering that information, so via some surveys and stuff, and then we work out who those real audiences are, that when we say we need to contact the sites, we need to contact the ROCs, where what we probably mean are the actual ROC operators at a ROC or technical experts at a ROC.
And so this introduces an extra step. So if the ROCs are asking for this, then the ROCs have to be responsive. We don't want to be in the situation where we're waiting 4 weeks later because ROC X, Y, and Z haven't applied to this, that, and the next thing. If the ROCs want this, that's fine, and it's not a bad thing, but the ROCs have to be responsive. They have to give input in a very timely manner. And when I said so previously, any plan that the OAT comes up with would obviously be presented here at the SA1 coordination meeting. So there the ROC managers would see, and I would expect it to include not only what's going to be worked on, what's going to happen, but also anything that had to be dropped or anything that isn't going to happen, so that the ROCs can give their blessing or not, as the case may be. So I think we have to balance how many people we get involved in giving input against how little time we've got. So as long as people are very responsive, we can include a few more people. But I think we'll have to put, when we ask for information, we'll have to put very clear deadlines, and it will be very clear that any feedback received after those deadlines will not be taken into account.
Yes, I think that's acceptable. That's okay. Yeah.
Okay, any other questions, comments, issues, points?
Yes, I have a couple of remarks. Okay. One is about bullet point number 6 under main challenges, especially any showstoppers you see. This is the bullet point I'm referring to, is the one which says, within the DG infrastructure, we implicitly assume only one production grid. This point was raised last time by the Italian ROC. What we said, and I said this, given the background information I have from EGI, is that there are some partners or potential future NGIs that would like to see the production infrastructure as something that is not just fixed at levels of availability that are predefined, but at the levels that are okay and requested by the users of their regional or national e-infrastructure. Said this, I think this topic, we came to the conclusion that this topic requires some deeper analysis to understand how these needs can be accommodated with the current EG approach, which distinguishes between a test size, production size, etc. And I don't like the conclusion, the final sentence, which says it is believed that there is no sufficient time or effort available. This was something said by Maite, but I think this requires more work. And I thought we all agreed on the fact that we needed to touch this technical point in detail. So just to jump into this conclusion without having actually analyzed what this requires technically, it doesn't make much sense to me. The sentence I'm referring to is the very last one in the bullet point, saying it is believed that there is no sufficient time or effort available to make this adaptation.